Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sigurdsson.
Yeah, no.
Sigurdsson.
You're just messing it up. I asked Klaus 15 times how to pronounce Sigurdsson, and I still got it wrong.
Come on. Try it, Casey. Oh, should I do it? Okay, let's see if I can get it right. So, Sigurdsson.
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 Is the G first
Sigurdsson?
Yeah, it's kind of silent.
Sigurdsson?
Sigurdsson. Yeah.
Brian Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
Sigurdsson.
Or just Brian from Image and Form.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it.
Okay.
Sigurdsson.
Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
I hope this makes it to the actual audio.
Sigurdsson. Listen!
And welcome to NVC IGN's Nintendo Podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and I'm here with Per Snyder.
Hey.
Zach.
Hey.
Brian.
Well, yeah, sure.
It's a Zach with a last name for sure.
Yeah.
And Brian Sigur? Gosh, no.
Sigurdsson.
Sigurdsson.
Hi, that's me, yeah. Or I think it's me.
No, that's you. It's definitely you. We traded out our regular Brian Altano for a Swedish Brian.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
What's
yeah.
up, Swedish Brian?
Yeah. And he's here from Image and Form. He's the CEO from SteamWorld Quest.
SteamWorld everything.
Yeah. All SteamWorld, of the, but specifically the to talk sink. About SteamWorld Quest, Hand of Gilgamesh. We're super excited to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all of the nindies, tons of news, tons of games out this week. We have way too much to talk about, and Per has to leave soon to go back to GDC.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and get through this as fast as possible. But of course, the Game Developers Conference, for people who don't know what that is, but I want to start out talking about SteamWorld, because that's why we have you here.
Oh, God. Wonderful.
So, first of all, I have a question.
Sure.
Why weren't you in the Nindies Direct this morning?
Well, it's like somebody paid off Nintendo better than us. No, I think it's... We were actually in the Nindie Showcase
yes.
a couple of weeks back. I think they don't want to wear out.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't want to explain your game for you. Mm-hmm. So can you do us all a favor and tell us your vision and what this game is about and how it's played?
Sure. Okay, so the game is called SteamWorld Quest. Mm-hmm. And it has the undertitle, Hand of Gilgamesh. Actually,
Gilgamesh.
No, yeah,
oh, no.
Not Gilgamesh. And it's a pun. Because we're so
yes.
so funny. I'm from Gothenburg in Sweden, and that's the pun capital of the world. It really
Wait,
is.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's official.
No.
Well, it's unofficial.
You haven't met
maybe.
Many Swedish people.
No, I'm just really gullible. I believe
they're renowned
everyone.
Comedians.
But yeah, so Hand of Gilgamesh. And so, yeah, of course, because it's robots and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and it's an RPG, maybe even a JRPG. Well, since it's a Swedish game, maybe it's an SRPG.
An SRPG?
Yeah.
Unless the J is silent, as in your name. Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And it's got card battle mechanics. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's much more of a JRPG with card battle mechanics than a card game with RPG elements. Yeah.
You want to know something funny and sad?
Yes.
You know, on our homepage, when we slot content, we A/B test headlines. So we test which headline works better. People click through more, and then the system automatically chooses the one that performs better. And I can hereby tell you that adding the word Netflix to a headline always doubles click through.
Okay.
Adding the word card to any RPG halves the click through.
So you took it out. Very good.
So we were excited about your game, and when we're talking about it, we first called it a card RPG, and the click through wasn't that great. Then we took the word card out, and everybody clicked.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that crazy? Which is seriously, if you do that, have an open mind. I mean, Paper Mario used cards.
Yeah,
right.
The last one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe just call it an SRPG.
We're just gonna call it an SRPG. It doesn't have any card battle.
That's right.
Mechanics.
All the cards were just
that
removed.
Is a lie.
Right, it's just props.
But for the record, I think the card battle mechanics look very, very cool.
I agree. I love card battle RPGs. We're gonna talk about a Chocobo mystery dungeon game later, and there's another Chocobo game called Chocobo Tales, which was a card based RPG, and I loved it. I played the crap out of that. So I'm super excited for card mechanic RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously some people are worried about that. Can you and I think it may have something to do with some games kind of overdoing the loot box mechanic and all of that. Can you explain like how is the card battle mechanic work in your game?
Yeah, I can do
that.
Do
I have to pay for my cards?
No.
Okay.
Okay, let me advertise a little bit then. It's like you pay once and never again for an image and form game.
Put to rest there.
Right, exactly. No loot box, nothing like that.
And that's why I like single player card game RPGs that you don't play with other people. Because like Hearthstone and stuff, you have to continuously pay to keep up with the card game mechanics. Yeah, okay. But with these games...
That's where the stigma comes in, though, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well... To answer the question there, Per, I think when we made SteamWorld Heist, it was when we announced that, a lot of people were saying that, well, I don't like turn-based combat. Until they played SteamWorld Heist, and they said, I didn't know I loved turn-based combat, but apparently I do. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be the same with SteamWorld Quest, because the card and battle mechanics in that game is just so tasty. It's so image and form. It's so best in the world. So, yeah. That's it.
Oh, that's very humble.
I was going to say all this in humility too.
Yes.
It's interesting that you bring up Heist because as sort of your first foray into turn-based mechanics, like I think it had people, those of us that played it, really jonesing for a SteamWorld RPG. So when Quest was announced, not only as a turn-based RPG, but also having this second layer of strategy attached to it in a card-based battle mechanic system, it was really exciting to me because... it's already a proven thing that you guys know what you're doing when it comes to turn-based stuff. How was adding the card battle mechanic, how did it change up the way you thought about the actual like overall design?
Oh, that's a great question there, Zach, because from the very beginning, and when we made the game, this is kind of secret, I guess, but it wasn't a card game from the beginning. And we felt that it would be really cool to add it. I should probably... expand on that a little bit. Like in 2011, we made the best game on the planet called Antil.
Oh,
it hasn't come to the Switch yet, but it just might.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And we realized then mixing up genres was so interesting. So that was sort of a castle defense, real-time strategy, line drawing game. And adding, it was like baking a cake. And if you add a lot of, like too many ingredients to a cake, it's going to, yeah, it's not going to be that great. But if you add just, I mean, if you experiment with how much you pour in of everything, then maybe you hit on something.
Yeah.
And so with SteamWorld Dig, that was sort of the same thing, like Dig Dug meets some sort of Metroid or Castlevania thingy, and then you have an interesting game. Also with Heist, like this. Yeah. So we thought, maybe this is going to work. And that we that's a, much of the time, that's how we make our games. Mm-hmm. We test things. We run into dozens of dead ends along the way. So it always takes us a long time to make games. Because it on paper, anything can sound really clever or stupid. But then you try it, and it might turn out exactly the other way around. It's something that sounds dumb is really good.
Was a card mechanic always sort of rattling around in the back of your mind, or was it something that somebody just tossed out? Like, you know what? I think this game could really use that. You know, like if we need something else to achieve this like balance that you're talking about, here's the card based mechanic. How did that come about?
So it had like a totally different core gameplay mechanic from the beginning. Mm. I'm going to come back in next year and tell you exactly what that was. but it's kind of cool to sort of keep that secret a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it clearly wasn't working. We had like a central sort of core gameplay thing. And it was worrying because that's something that we think that's the game. Like the core gameplay thing. I mean, after we have that, we sort of... we make it beautiful, we make it sound wonderful, and so on. But if that thing in the middle there like isn't perfect, then yeah, the game isn't going to be very good. So yeah, we were kind of just plodding along with this core gameplay thing, and we were just worried. And then the game director, a brilliant guy called Peter Johansson, there's no silent J in the name, right? He sat me down one evening and said, listen, I don't think this is going to work, but let's go through the options. And he sort of drew up six different paths to sort of go forward with the game. Mm-hmm. One was, let's just stay on the course and hope that we make this work, and then sort of change it a little bit. And then at the very end of that, like the furthest away was this card battle mechanic.
You said, let's just change it all.
No, I said, let's keep it the way it is. But then he changed everything. We talked about it. And we decided, it's like, that might just work. And it was pretty good because it was easy to prototype that. We could actually play it without programming anything. We could sort of play it by hand. And so,
literally by hand.
Yeah. And, I mean, we changed that.
Cards, get it?
Dad. Yeah, but we had to iterate on that like tons of times as well. Yeah.
If you had to compare the card mechanics in SteamWorld Quest to an existing card game, which one would be the most apt comparison?
I can predict all his answers.
Okay. Let us know
your prediction.
Casey, we would never build a game that was similar to another game on the market.
So, Casey, we would never. No, that's very good. But it's not a bad answer because it's we.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you for saving me. There are a few games that have inspired SteamWorld Quest, and if I were to rattle a few of them off, I would like after each one, I would say, but it's not really like that.
Okay.
So it's talking about. Which one is the closest? I think actually, like there would be one or two physical card games, like that you play with a regular 52 card deck.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That might come close. Even you'll understand when you play the game.
Okay, I'm excited. So Joe Scrubbles, our UK editor, was able to play, and he said that it's entirely different to its forebears. It's simultaneously accessible and intimidatingly smart, and just bloody lovely. And he also said that it's more story-based than previous games. Can you kind of talk about why you decided to go more narratively heavy?
Oh, yeah. First, thanks to Joe. I'm going to pay him later. Well, it was, we wanted to do that is with all the games before, like I was sort of touching on it before, that the core gameplay mechanic in our games is the most important. But then we have like really, really brilliant writers, I think. And they, sometimes their stuff gets sort of tacked on at the end, if you understand what I mean.
And they all, I think you talked about this before, but you know, do they all herald from the comedy capital of the world, or are they international writers? Are they?
No, they're all from the comedy capital, yeah.
And they all write in English though?
Yeah.
You write the script in English, you don't start in Swedish?
No, we write it in English. Yeah. We don't even have a Swedish version of any of our games, wow. actually. Which is kind of dumb, actually. I think we would manage, right? But yeah, they're there, and they're just very, very smart people, I think. Or clever, I should say.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. Some of them are, yeah, dad jokes. They're rate very highly in the office and so on. So it's we have a good time with it.
Dad jokes, huh?
Plenty
I'd like
puns.
To take yeah. this opportunity to announce my new job at Image Informed Games.
Dad yeah. joke creator.
That's right.
We're the masters.
So, yeah, it's we wanted to give them more space this time. Mm-hmm. And ironically, it turned into this game because also from the beginning, SteamWorld Quest was a much smaller game. Mm. We were sort of thinking that now we've made games that took a long time to make, like SteamWorld Heist took forever. It almost mm-hmm. took 2 years to make that game.
Wow.
SteamWorld Dig 2, although we had like the blueprint from the original, it took forever. It mm-hmm. took like some 17, 18 months to make that.
Mm.
And we were just, everyone was more or less tired, and we said, let's make a small, simple game. And then it sort of, yeah, just feature crept into a like a really epic game.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've seen the footage, obviously, from the showcase. Is there like an overworld where you walk around, or is everything played from a side-scrolling perspective? How's the setup?
Yeah, great. Well, everything is played from the side-scrolling mm-hmm. setup with cutscenes in here and there.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely that you don't walk around in an overworld.
Okay. There's no like switch to a different perspective. It's all like in this same setting.
Yeah. That's where it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's because it's sort of a cohesive adventure. Like mm-hmm. you start at one point. We had what do you call it? Like sketches of overworld, and mm-hmm. we had prototypes of that. But we just found that we're not really doing anything in the overworld. Mm-hmm. We want people to go through the
just
the
traversal adventure. For chores, traversal's sake. Right. Is that
yeah?
Yeah.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. And yeah. So in the end, we were very happy with that. Also meant that we could sort of focus even more on the graphics from that perspective.
Any, obviously, I'm sure we'll see lots of characters from the SteamWorld series reappear. Anything about the enemies? Any favorite enemy designs or creatures or anything you have in the game?
Yeah. Yeah. I have I really have a few, actually.
Yeah.
Everyone is a robot.
Yeah.
Like, it's SteamWorld.
Right.
So,
in
this game, not everyone.
Yeah, there's
before,
also magic, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah. There's also like magical
There's
creatures.
Magic, yeah. yeah, right. But my favorite character is this whimsical guy who rolls around on one wheel, and he doesn't have a head. He has a bird cage instead of a head, and in the bird cage, there is a robotic little bird. I think just look at him. It's like, why? What is this?
Yeah.
It's like, why does?
You.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I love being. I mean, you love your jobs obviously because you don't want to quit. But it's the same thing for me.
It depends on how much you're paying, Brian.
It's the same thing for me. I love my job, just and not like walk by the art department every day, but like maybe like every 2 weeks or something to sort of peek over the shoulder of someone mm-hmm. and just look at something that is just fabulous, like something that is whimsical or beautiful. It's great.
So, but you said there's magic in SteamWorld.
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, from the beginning, I think we were aiming at sort of explaining everything like someone's dream or like,
okay.
like a story.
Yeah.
But
then you're like,
the writers actually found a way to okay. put it into the SteamWorld lore. So SteamWorld Quest is actually on the SteamWorld timeline. And that that it is actually means a lot to us because it sort of stretches the timeline for SteamWorld a great, great deal. So now we can probably make like at least two more SteamWorld games after this.
Oh, because it did world building.
Right.
And you're going to make a lot more.
So yeah, we're going to make a lot more. Yeah. Two dozen.
So games. You're basically ticking
you
off
here first.
Every genre box. So goes without saying Battle Royale is next, right? That's what the kids are playing now.
100 robots 100 drop onto robots. An island.
Yeah.
Right. Well, now, yeah. Let's see. I know what's next, actually.
You do already?
Yeah. What's next? Yeah. What is genre?
It? It's, I can't, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
How's that? Okay.
Does it have right. robots?
Yes, it has robots.
Oh, confirmed.
That's great.
Next SteamWorld has robots. So can you tell us maybe a window of when we can expect this to come out on Switch?
This,
SteamWorld Quest.
SteamWorld Quest, very good.
And the second one.
Yeah, and the next one.
So SteamWorld Quest is, I mean, we're still only saying 2019.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But seriously, I really think it's a very decent game. It's a really good game. And so I'm fond of saying, like, later than you want, but sooner than you expect.
Okay.
Are you almost done with the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Will it be playable at PAX East?
It's already playable, you know. But okay. But it's if it's playable in its final form or not. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
We'll
okay.
I'll leave that sort of unsaid.
A coy.
I probably said everything.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Anyway, right.
Well, hopefully we'll find out more soon.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for talking to us about that indie. Let's move on to more indies because, man, there's honestly just way too many. I have a list of more than a dozen indie games coming out for Nintendo Switch this year, all showed off in a 30-minute Nintendo Direct this morning.
Right.
And I think I will just want to talk about the biggest surprise announcement first. And then move on. No,
I mean, surprised? I see what you have. I see what you have listed here.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's the first.
It is a big surprise, but I think we got a few surprises in this direct.
Okay, we got a lot of surprises. Yeah. You're right.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah.
Crypt of the Necrodancer featuring The Legend of Zelda.
That's quite the title.
That's the entire title. I already
that is
noticed.
The entire title.
It busted really already long. One of our displays on the website because it's so freaking long. Never do that.
Okay, point taken, yeah.
But there are going to be 25 remix Zelda tracks, iconic enemies and items from Zelda, but also spells, characters, and weapons from Crypt of the Necrodancer. And it's coming out in spring. And have you guys played Crypt of the Necrodancer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I played that game was at PAX East with a dance pad.
Yeah.
So I desperately want to play this game with a dance pad.
That's funny.
In the office. That is my dream.
Okay. So we can make that happen, Casey.
For the uninitiated, can you talk to us a little bit about what Crypt of the Necromancer or Necrodancer is?
Yes. Yeah. Crypt of the Necrodancer is a dungeon, like a mystery dungeon RPG set to a beat of a song. So all of your movements are set to the beat and you need to maintain the beat to keep up a kind of like combo going.
Mm-hmm.
But to maintain that beat, you have to continuously move. And when you move, the enemies move. Everything happens to the beat. So if you want to attack an enemy, you have to time it with the beat. And if you get attacked or if you don't move, you kind of reset your timer.
And then, you know, for people who haven't seen footage of either game, Cadence of Hyrule or Necrodancer, it's all set on a grid, right? Mm-hmm. The way you move is like, it's almost like on a chessboard where you like move forward
it's
constantly.
Like a strategy RPG.
Side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and it's a shopkeeper that sings.
Apart from the fact that, first of all, I'm already, the art style almost reminds
super
me
cool.
of the Capcom Zelda games. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very playful, very hand-drawn. It looks very different from the original game, actually. Mm-hmm. It looks more like a Nintendo game. And then, this is one of those concepts that you could not have predicted. First of
Never.
All, I have a question for Brian. Like, this is Nintendo working with an indie developer and giving them one of their most successful franchises and characters and melodies to mess with.
Yes, yeah. Tom and I got to talk to Kirk Scott, who is the man on Nintendo, the Nintendo and Indies project, and we talked to him a little bit about what this game means for Nintendo properties. And he kind of put it in an interesting way. He's like, this isn't a Zelda game by the Necrodancer developers. This is a Necrodancer game that has Zelda characters and assets in it, right? Mm-hmm. Like licensed to it, which is really interesting because it opens up this realm of possibility that didn't really exist before or has been done like pretty limited. You know, you mentioned Capcom developing Oracle of Seasons and Ages and mm-hmm. Minish Cap. But outside of that, you know, I guess Hyrule Warriors.
Rabbids.
Like, yeah, so we're starting to see more and more of this. And I wonder if this was going to be your question as well.
Well, my question is...
Go ahead.
If you guys could work on any Nintendo IP, if Nintendo said, hey, do you guys want any of our character sets in one of your games, what would you go for? Would you go for Metroid Dig? What would you do?
No, we would go for Metroid.
Yeah, for sure.
And I would give my left arm. Yeah. If they call me. Yeah, even left-handed. So that would be really troublesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah. What is it about Metroid? Why would you go for that one?
Yeah, but it's just so cool.
Yeah.
I think so. And also... kind of goes with what we do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you have that kind of Metroidvania style setup in your games a lot.
Right? We understand Metroidvania as well, right?
Yeah.
It would be a good match.
But I mean, it sounds like this is not just Nintendo saying, you know, like they're working with a second party and saying, here, make us a Metroid game. Like, what if they said, marry it with what you guys do best? What would you do?
Oh, man.
I mean, I guess Samus could dig.
Yeah.
She's got a grapple hook.
Sam World.
No, I'm sure we would come up with something really good.
Yeah.
An all new mech suit.
Yeah, well, yeah.
A steampunk Metroid could be very cool.
That would be really neat.
No, that would be super nice. Yeah. That would be super great.
Actually, Samus in the SteamWorld heist setup would totally work.
Yeah.
The turn based, like almost, with all the weapons.
Almost is Samus, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we got Piper, who is very, very close to Samus Aran, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they could sort of team up, I think.
All right. We'll call them.
Yeah, I'll call them.
Yeah.
It opens up this sort of realm of possibility. Like, immediately in the office, people started talking about what developers would you want to develop, you know, different sort of Nintendo franchise titles. And a lot of people mentioned Image and Form in the same breath as Metroid. We talked a lot about, my suggestion was, like, Kid Icarus goes to Yacht Club. I'd love to see Yacht Club take on something like that. Yeah, but there's so many possibilities out there now, and I think that this is such an interesting first step into that realm, you know, that sacred realm.
See what you did. No, I like it.
Are you from Göteborg?
Yeah.
I mean, we did get a Mario DDR on the GameCube as well.
Mm-hmm.
I plan on using that dance pad.
Yep.
With
game. You and that dance pad.
Yep. Very cool.
I need it.
But yeah, what a surprise. That means we get two Zelda-themed games this year.
Which is crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
So it should be coming out sometime this spring. And we also got another surprise, and the Nintendo Direct opened with this one, Cuphead for Switch.
Mm. Yeah.
I think has been kind of going around the rumor mill for a couple of months now, and it finally actually happened. And the most surprising thing, I think, besides the creepy milkman, Nintendo thanked Microsoft.
Yeah, thanks to our friends at Microsoft.
Yeah,
yeah.
For letting Cuphead.
How weird is that?
I guess.
I mean, they're buds now.
Of course. Right. There has to be like a business decision there, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing Microsoft slowly moving into a more agnostic space in gaming. You know, making Xbox Live tool sets available to platforms outside of the Xbox. Obviously, co-publishing, always creating Xbox and PC versions of games. I'm curious to see where this goes.
Yeah.
You know, they might be predicting the boxless future and wanting to become the first Netflix of gaming.
Mm. I don't see why this isn't a first look at a bigger partnership. In my mind, the way that I think about Microsoft licensing their games to Nintendo or looking at the way that Nintendo is doing streaming in Japan with like Assassin's Creed and Resident Evil, I like the idea that Microsoft is building this streaming box. Nintendo has already got one foot into the streaming pool, that they're obviously trying out these things to see if they work. Microsoft adopting Nintendo as like their portable outlet is so much smarter than them working off of their tablet line or something like that. Like, I think it would be so smart to have this integration kind of across the board. And it's like, yeah, you can stream Gears of War 5 to your Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Like,
and then, I mean, they may have looked at the market and said Switch is not a competitor. It's such a different device. I mean, hardware power wise, and maybe the Switch is the right place to bring some of our classic franchises or some of the 2D games to.
What a obviously, banger to start with, though.
Yeah. Obviously, they made bank on Switch with Minecraft. That's a Microsoft franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, you know, they allowed Banjo-Kazooie on the Game Boy, on the DS. Right, and they did Flight Simulator on non-Microsoft platforms.
So it's been a slow build-up to where we are now.
Yep.
Yeah.
But very interesting. Huh? Again, one of those, it's been rumored for a long time, but it seemed kind of improbable given that it was only on Xbox title at one point, and here it is on Switch already launching in April.
MDHR, as a studio MDHR who developed Cuphead, is essentially a Microsoft second party studio, right? So it's really interesting. I would love to have been a fly on the wall during their conversation about like, hey, by the way, you know, we've been talking about your game as an exclusive to Xbox for the majority of your development cycle. Yep. But what if we put you on Switch as well? Like, that's wild. Like, it must have blown those guys' minds, you know?
I really think so. It's and also for the studio to get that opportunity, because I think it's going to be a fantastic handheld game.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Cuphead, if you don't know about Cuphead, it's a 2D side-scrolling, very challenging platformer shooter. Mm-hmm. Did I describe that right?
Gunstar yes. Heroes.
Gunstar yeah. Heroes type yeah. thing? but it has really beautiful hand-drawn graphics.
Mm. Yeah, it looks...
like an old cartoon.
Like a 1930s cartoon.
More than any game in the history of games, it looks like a cartoon. Yeah. Complete with little, you know, film rip lines and dust on the lens and all that. It's really well made.
And it's also very challenging.
Yep.
So look forward to that. It comes out on April 18th on Nintendo Switch. And so the next game that they showed was Stranger Things 3, the game from Bonus XP. It's going to have local co-op, 12 playable characters, and it comes out on July 4th, the same day as the Season 3 launch. And I guess it's meant to be played alongside Season 3.
Do you mean that? I mean, is it going to unlock? How does that work now? Do we get all the episodes at the same time?
I think maybe it might extrapolate. I'm just completely guessing here. It might extrapolate on some of the season, maybe some extra details here and there, but they are telling you to wipe your weekend clean because you're going to be spending all weekend playing the game and watching Stranger Things.
Just looking at the trailers that they've shown for Stranger Things, the game trips me out because it's just like Joyce and I forget the cop's name, just rampaging through buildings, just beating people up, and the kids have bats and stuff. And it's like, wow, this third season's really taking a detour here.
They're all grown up.
Yeah.
It's a weird beating up people in buildings.
It's a weird format. It feels like there would have been a, you know, like if you look at the time frame that Stranger Things is set in, like it's weird that they didn't just adapt the look and feel of the games of that age and instead went with this weird kind of isometric game.
Yeah.
Like it would have fit much better with an NES style game.
Tom Marks has had a great observation about Stranger Things in that it feels he got to play it at the Nindies event, and he said it feels a lot like the Goof Troop game on Super Nintendo.
Okay,
which was like a really great game.
Yeah,
just really different. So,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing. This is going to be a Nintendo Switch console exclusive. So I guess it's going to come out on Switch and PC. Possibly only.
All right.
Could come out on Netflix.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
And the next game that they brought up in the Nintendo Direct was Red Lantern from Timberline Studios. And I know that we are all very excited for this one. And it's basically a sled dog survival game. You're playing as a woman who's trying to reinvent herself. So she makes a goal to get a van, get dogs, go to Alaska, and complete the...
Iditarod. Yeah.
Thank you. Which is a sled dog race that takes weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
The Alaskan wilderness.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you, have you ever raced any sled dogs?
I have, actually.
Of course.
Yeah, everybody does that in Sweden.
Yeah.
Weekends, of course, right?
I still can't. I think you're lying. I'm not sure.
But actually, up north in Sweden, we have these, not dog sled, but we have sled races. Like you should see those. Everyone owns one. Like
that's not true.
You know, almost everyone owns a sled like that, and it's an amazing piece of engineering.
Yeah,
it completely like has no motor or anything like that. You just push it.
Is it like the little wooden sleds that we know from like Christmas movies? Remember, this is California.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, right. Yeah, no, a little bit.
I'm
bigger,
actually from a
little
bit bigger place, but
we call them kicks because you sort of kick it as you go along. Mm. And there are some serious kick races, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Well, this is not that.
No.
This game has actual dogs in it. And the first thing that came to mind when I saw it was Firewatch.
Just
the art style. It's kind of partially cel-shaded looking, really vibrant colors, you know, all the sunsets and the snow and all that. The narration is really good. So it seems like it's a really cool story-driven game.
It really, the narration from the beginning just really drew me in.
Yeah. It's like a touching trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a really good
job. It tugged at my heartstrings for sure.
So the trailer doesn't do a great job of describing what this game actually is. Mm-hmm. And it's not playable at GDC, but we sat down with Timberland Studios and talked to them a little bit about what the game is. And it's an open world exploration game. Basically, you get knocked off course by any number of instanced conflicts, right? So, like, mm-hmm. in the trailer, we saw a bear attack, but you could break your sled and fall off a cliff, or you could knock yourself out on a log that's fallen over, or a tree could fall on one of the dogs, or something like that. Ultimately, you get knocked off course, and you have to figure out a way to get back to civilization, but you have to care for your dogs and care for yourself along the way, and there's, like, over... some kind of like over 100 permutations of things that can happen along the way. So each playthrough is different. It's almost like a roguelike. Mm. But there are like specific story beats that also happen along the way. It's a super interesting idea. I think it looks really, really cool. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, same. Cool. And the next game that they talked about was called Rad from Double Fine and published by Bandai Namco.
Yep.
Which is interesting.
So a Tim Schafer joint.
Yes. Yeah, he was actually, he was in the direct to make a pun saying that
just a little cameo.
Real rad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a 3D action roguelike where radioactive toxins will mutate your character. Comes out this summer. And in the trailer, we kind of saw a trailer, a guy moving around, attacking things and fighting things and picking things up and then have his head mutate into a snake head or like get wings or get a weird tentacle
arm. Get a giant arm.
And at the end of the trailer, they showed him like, okay, like you've grown. This kid shows promise and him entering some sort of structure that looked weird. This game is also not playable at GDC as far as I know. So I haven't been able to play it, even though I really want to.
Yeah, Double Fine is obviously a developer with a good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And they've consistently developed very, very funny games.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way this looks. It looks cartoonish. It looks like a classic kind of like Super NES, like overhead shooters, like, you know, zombies killed my neighbors.
Yeah, that's what I thought of too, zombies killed my neighbors.
I'm digging it. And obviously rad is a pun because it's all radioactive.
Yeah.
Just to explain it.
But it's cool. Like you said, I mean, Double Fine kind of owned the space of humor. You know that you're going to respect the humor when you play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Excited about that one too.
And another game that has gotten kind of a lot of buzz in the office is Katana Zero from Devolver Digital. I played this game at the Nindies showcase just a few hours ago, and it was really cool. And my favorite feature is that you can't kill the cat. no kidding, but they actually do make the animals unkillable in that game. But you play as an assassin named Dragon, and you get orders from your employer who sends you on these missions. And at the end of every mission, you go home, you drink some tea, and you see your therapist. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of different mechanics besides just the side-scrolling action, which is really cool and awesome, but there are conversations that you can have and interrupt the person you're speaking with, and that affects what happens later in the game.
Nice.
And it just has an interesting story and really cool, really fun gameplay. Did you get to play it, Zach?
No, I didn't play this one, but I have heard a lot about it. And just like the time slowing mechanics, the way that the whole premise of the game is that you have precognition, right? Mm-hmm. So that you can see what happens before it happens. But you play through those sequences, and that's you seeing the future. Mm-hmm. So when you die, you go back to the beginning of a room and have to go back through it. So you're learning enemy patterns each time, and everything, every enemy and yourself, you're all in a one-hit kill, like one HP scale. So you really have to make smart decisions. And yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Hmm. Comes out
also, like,
same,
crazy violent.
Comes out just the same day. Well, not in the trailer, right?
Or, oh, no, it's pretty bloody.
Yeah. Oh, which one? There was one game that has violence usually and didn't have it in the trailer. Was that Rad? No.
Could have been Blood Roots.
Oh, Blood Roots, that's right. Yeah, for Blood the trailer, Roots. I think they just kind of turned off Blood mode.
Which is awesome.
That's funny.
Yeah, Blood Roots is great.
So Katana Zero comes out the same day as Cuphead. April is getting a little busy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a lot of cool indies coming in April.
That is a game that I am definitely going to get when it comes out, and I want to beat it and figure out what's going on with that mystery.
Hmm.
It's really interesting, and the gameplay is so much fun.
Jeez, that's a giant list, Casey.
I know. Well, like, it was a 30. It was the longest Nindies Direct they've had. It was 30 minutes long. There were a ton of games. We can just go through until we get here. Nuclear Throne from Flambeer is available now. It's a post-apocalyptic roguelike top-down shooter. Super Crate Box from Flambeer is a Nintendo Switch version. It's going to include exclusive two-player co-op and comprehensive and competitive multiplayer. Making up words.
Also April.
Mm-hmm.
So that's four April games.
Yep.
April.
Flambeer Arcade is going to launch with Ultra Bugs, and it's going to continuously evolve with more games as time goes on. It's a collection of small games, and that releases later this year.
It was a cute idea, I thought. Yeah. A game that keeps on changing.
Yeah, you just keep getting more as it goes. And then the next one is another Devolver Digital game, My Friend Pedro.
And God, My Friend Pedro is
cool. A sentient banana named Pedro.
My friend Pedro, if you guys haven't checked it out, like, you need to look it up. Have you seen this game?
I haven't.
It's unbelievable. So you play this, like, hitman who has amnesia, and you meet a talking banana who, like, walks you through each level.
Of course
you
do, yeah.
Yeah. But the whole mechanic is, like, you have you're constantly doing backflips or, like, rolling or jumping over people, and you can slow down time, but you can also track two enemies at any given time or ricochet bullets off of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so watching somebody that knows how to play this game play it is like watching a premier ballerina like dancing through.
It's like
levels.
Watching Neo in the Matrix, like avoiding bullets. Exactly. It's like that. Yeah, it's really cool.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a super, super cool game. It's really, really funny.
Thankfully not in April. That's
no.
coming in June. Yeah.
And next one, Zach, were you the one who was excited for this, Creature in the Well?
Me too.
Creature in the Well.
Studio. Okay, I didn't get to play this.
Yeah, Creature in the Well is probably... Creature in the Well and Bloodroots are the two that really jumped out at me at the showcase. Creature in the Well specifically is this top-down, think like Hyper Light Drifter, but also make it pinball. So you're dashing to avoid enemies, you're running around these open spaces, but you're also ricocheting enemy bullets and projectiles to power up.
Kind of Link when he returns, like Ganon's fireball.
Yeah, like at the end of a Zelda game. Yeah, super fun, really like fast-paced, and there's a lot of things that you can do in this game, not unlike Hyper Light Drifter, where there will be rooms with these really intense puzzles to solve, and you can just blow right past them if you want to. You don't have to solve them. You can go into the next thing to like complete the main objective, but if you can wrap your head around how to solve those puzzles, you get rewarded with like really cool gear or like bonus life, like stuff like that. So it's really interesting. There's a really like cool like risk rewards situation.
So do you do that sort of in real time then, solve these puzzles? You can't really stop and
yeah. So essentially every room is a puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that like think of a pinball table where you've got bumpers arrayed in like say a semicircle. So enemies will shoot projectiles at you, and you have to position yourself to bounce those projectiles at the bumpers to power up these areas that open the doors to get you to the next area.
Yeah.
So in some cases, these rooms are like there's no enemies; there's just the puzzle itself. Mm. But the doors are already open for you, so you can run into the room and see that there's a puzzle to solve here, or you can say, "I'd rather just get to the boss and get to the next area." So it's all do you spend the time to solve this puzzle and get frustrated, which I admittedly did, or get a potentially really cool power up. Like the one I got gave you a laser sight on your sword, so you could see exactly where you were ricocheting your projectiles
to. Right.
Or do you just like slam through it and get to the next area? Mm. It's super cool. That's developed awesome. By two dudes. It looks amazing. Like, yeah, I'm really excited for this game.
Nice.
And that releases this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And next is Blaster Master Zero 2.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
We didn't know a sequel was in the works. Yeah,
And that's available now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
I think they're small studios where nobody leaks the game that they're working on.
Oh, clever people.
Yeah.
How do they do it?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Or they live in the most remote nation on Earth, somewhere where the sun don't shine and nothing gets leaked. Other developers do that. But yeah, this is from Inti Creates. Blaster Master Zero was obviously a really cool revival of the classic, and this one seems to continue in that same set where you have side-scrolling kind of vehicular shooting action, and then the more kind of top-down perspectives with a zoomed-in view. So they showed that in the trailer.
So when did the original come out?
Switch launch.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So Blaster, well, the original was an NES.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
But Blaster Master Zero launched, I think, day and date with the Switch, or maybe just a little bit after.
March 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah,
super cool game.
And we also got to see a little bit of Pine, which looks like an open world adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come out in August. It's by Congregate and Twillbound. And it showed a guy with a bow and arrow with some fox people interrupting a battle between some alligator people and elk people.
Mm-hmm.
It seems interesting, but it looks like an open world. You have a bow and arrow, you hunt, you have to intervene with different kind of tribes around.
Mm-hmm.
It seems cool, but I also didn't get to play that game.
Mm.
But I don't think it's at GDC, but hopefully we'll be able to play it eventually. Yeah. And then next is Bloodroots by Paper Colt. And that was a super fun game.
Yeah, Bloodroots rules.
And I learned it's called Bloodroots because, so as you're playing, dying is part of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to die. It's one, you get killed with one hit. You kill enemies with one hit. And when you die, you leave a patch of white flowers on the map, and that's called blood roots. Mm-hmm. And I guess these flowers, if you break them open, they are like have a dark red orange dye that can be used as like body paint. So that's
in the game? From.
No, in real life.
Oh, cool. Oh,
in real life.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. Okay, yes. No, blood roots are a real thing.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, and they grow where people die?
No, yes. I don't. I think that was a made up thing.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's an ultra violent really Western gross. Revenge tale where you can use literally anything as a weapon, and I think my favorite was picking up a fish and then putting it on someone's head.
I also did that, yeah.
That was the best.
But I also kept getting confused as to which was the pick up and drop button and which was the attack button. Mm-hmm. So there was early on, there's a tough enemy like in the first map that killed me a two dozen times, like just kept wiping the floor with me, and there was just a field of these white flowers around him by the time I got past him. It was bad.
But no, the different weapons all do really cool, interesting things, and it seems cool to find your favorites and to see what does what. I think like the ladder, you could twirl around like an AOE. Some
sword
weapons,
gives you a dash,
which
like
is
a diagonal
really
dash.
Strong.
Yeah.
You could interact with a cannon that shoots you up, and if you like aim it as you come down right, you can kill multiple enemies at the same time. It's really cool, and it's just kind of like a small level base. So they put you in a small area, and you have to defeat every enemy in that area before you can move on to the
Very
next
cool.
one.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And then we also have a Overland by Finji. It's a turn-based survival game. It comes out this fall. I think this one was at the Indie Showcase. Did either of you get to play it?
No, I did not.
I did not get to play this one either. But
nope.
There you go.
I didn't play it either.
What about Darkwood?
Tom played Darkwood and said it was really cool.
Okay.
But yeah, this kind of game, like the survival horror, like the top-down thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a hard time like getting into that thing. And this,
I like the way this looks, though.
Really, see, like this like dark art style to me, where it's like everything is sort of candlelit or like just you know, it just doesn't do anything.
Like
for
you
me.
Don't like the Don't Starve games, that
no.
kind of stuff. Well, this
Mm-mm.
this is like you have you illuminate the darkness with your flashlight, so you can only see part of the map most of the time. And there are these. It seems to be a kind of different from most. Most of these dark games where the enemies are slow and lumbering, it's like creepy. You know, you're constantly turning around to check what's behind you, and it's not like this super fast-paced adrenaline game. It's really, it's literally
just
creepy,
spooky.
Right?
I'm too
cool.
much of a baby
play
for that.
This.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Too wimpy.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
So wimpy.
Not for Zach.
And then they also talked about Neocab, and Tom was telling me that this has been playable in a few different places, but before GDC, but I was able to play it, and it seems like there are some features that Tom hasn't seen before. But it's an emotional survival game about Lena, who's the last human driver in like a futuristic take of San Francisco. And it's,
cool.
Mm-hmm. It's called Los Ojos, is a fictional city. Mm-hmm. But I was able to talk to the writer, Paula Rogers, and she said that she's from San Francisco. So she pulled very heavily from her experience living in the city. And this is her take on what the city might be like if they take automated tech too far.
Right.
And
yeah, you're like the last human driver, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like you do rideshare. You're an Uber driver in the future where there are now self-driving cars.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a corporation called Capra, and they basically lobbied to get rid of all human driving cars because they're dangerous and cars are dangerous. And then there is a rebellion group called Radix, and they will respond to people's calls when Capra does something bad. Like, for example, I played an instance where a Capra car ran over some dude on a bike, and he called Radix, and they came and then destroyed the Capra car. but it's dialogue. It's a dialogue-heavy, story-driven game where you are trying to balance keeping yourself happy, keeping your riders happy, and then also not getting noticed by this corporation that's watching you while trying to find your friend who's missing. But you still have to make money. I mean, how else are you going to pay rent, right?
Right. I think it's interesting, like, this... It's almost like a text-driven adventure or, like, graphic novel or something like that. And just kind of speaks to the variety of games that are available on Switch and how Nintendo is really going out and finding these sort of diamonds in the rough in all genres. I think it's really cool to see something like that in an indies event.
It also looks really pretty. And I think one of my favorite features is that, so the main character is wearing a bracelet that kind of monitors her emotions and it changes color based on what she's feeling. But instead of treating any one emotion as bad or like you're playing wrong, it says specifically all emotions are valid. So just because you're in the red and you're feeling intense anger doesn't mean that you're playing the game wrong. Like, for example, when I was playing, I was really angry at this guy in my car who was with a woman. And because I was angry, I unlocked an extra dialogue option that let me stand up for the woman. Mm-hmm. So it does things like, depending on your mood, will carry over to the next drive and change your dialogue options.
No, that's little known fact. You can always tell what kind of mood Pear is in based on the color of the Joy-Con that he puts on his Switch that day.
That's right.
So
it's like,
yeah,
like a mood ring.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can lie to everyone by choosing the wrong Joy-Con. But yeah, Neo Cab comes out this summer. It looks cool. There's also Swim Sanity by Decoy Games, which is a multiplayer underwater shooter. There's co-op and versus modes, online and local, and that's also coming out this summer.
Kind of like a fishy Gradius.
A fishy
Gradius.
What is that?
Like a side-scrolling shooter, but it's fish-themed.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very... I didn't get to see this game or play it.
It's got an interesting art style. Mm-hmm. Not sold on it yet, but it looks like mm-hmm. there's a lot going on with really big enemies and stuff. I would mm-hmm. love to play it.
And it's multiplayer, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Like a fun party game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, Brian, what were your three top games from the Nindie Showcase?
Okay, so... I have to.
You guys were on an airplane probably when the.
While it was on, I was in constant meetings while this. So
these guys have been here since Sunday, and he was telling me that they were kicking back in the park riding electric bikes. So, no, their GDC has not been that difficult.
Well, about this, I mean, first and foremost, for me, it's Cuphead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I just love it. It's going to be really interesting to see how that is when you play it in bed mm-hmm. on your handheld. That's going to be great fun. Also, I'm really interested in, obviously my friend Pedro, like mm-hmm. a sentient banana.
Yeah.
I knew you'd like that one.
It has to be great. And also, I was intrigued by, sorry, I need to.
Oh, no worries. Sort of,
but yeah. The
list is very long.
Right. It's super long. What was the name of the dog sled?
Red Lantern. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Not the Zhang Yimou movie, but mm-mm. the
right.
video game.
Now, that just sounds like fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
What about you, Zach?
Yeah, mine, Creature in the Well. I think I love that Hyperlight Drifter, I think, is one of the best indies in the last 10 years, 5 years maybe. But I really like what Creature is shaking up there. I really like Blood Roots a lot. I think it was so like fast-paced and kind of wild and crazy. And I also chose the Red Lantern because I think, like Pear said, they're giving off heavy Firewatch vibes. So
yeah, for me, it was pretty clear. Cadence of Hyrule, mm-hmm. big Zelda fan, obviously. I just thought it looked so... It's so cool to have a different art style take on all these classic Zelda enemies, too, to like see how they translated them. It's just really charming. The Red Lantern, love the way it looks, love the narration and the storytelling, the feel to the game, and then Creature in the Well. I love pinball. And this is just a really cool take on the genre that I don't think we've seen like that.
It's
Spirit Sphere like use that mechanic, but it was more of a tennis game, and this is like an action puzzle game.
It's like a constant multi-ball in that game.
No, yeah, that's it.
It's really cool.
How about you, Case?
So obviously, Cadence of Hyrule. I'm super mm-hmm. excited for that. But if we weren't counting that, I feel like it's almost unfair.
What?
Is it not?
Okay,
so, well, the Red Lantern, of course, Neo Cab, and Katana Zero.
Okay.
Are my three, cool. not Sweet. Counting Cadence.
Nice.
Have you guys been able to play any games that weren't in the Nindie Showcase?
No.
At GDC yet?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What have you played? Anything worth talking about?
I played Skellboy. Mm-hmm. It's from a small German team, and Fabraz is bringing it out here. It's a coincidence. I didn't know that.
Big surprise.
yeah, I immediately ran there, and we
the Germans
put on our Lederhosen
developer
and
conference.
The Schuhplattler together.
The accordion.
Yeah.
I just thought of it because they also brought Spirit Sphere out. So mm-hmm. they're working with a different developer on this. Skellboy with an E. It's best described as Paper Zelda.
Okay.
So it's like kind Paper of Mario.
Like, yeah, it's like you have a sword, you have different weapons. You can hit your enemies, like skeleton stuff. It's very Halloween looking the whole game, and the characters are kind of flat, little cards almost. And it's an action RPG. You explore areas. You can jump. You can hit things. You can take, like, when you kill an enemy, you can take parts like their head or their body, and you take on different traits. So like if you kill a crappy enemy like a zombie and you take their head, your health actually goes down because zombies, as we all know, don't have a lot of health left, right? Mm-hmm. It's really charming. Kind of not it really feels like a Zelda game done Paper Mario.
That's awesome.
So I don't know how deep the RPG mechanics are in it, or whether you ever get out of this castle into a bigger world. But what I played, I really liked. That's coming out soon.
Brian, when you come to something like GDC, do you get an opportunity to go down to the show floor and like actually go hands on with games, or are you just constantly in meetings and?
I'm
podcasts.
Exactly. But I'm very much in meetings. But so far, I've only had time to play one game, and that's from a studio called Mighty Yell in Canada. Started by one of the guys behind the game Runbow.
Oh yeah,
okay. That one? No, that's great.
Yeah,
yeah. And he's going to kill me now, like, because he let me play it, and I can't remember what the name of the game. But it's a really cool game about being a con artist.
Oh, okay.
And sort of, what do you call it? Like, dialogue-driven game.
Cool.
We'll figure that out and put it down in the description.
Hey, what the hell does that mean?
It's called something like that. Yeah. Like the big con or something like that. Yeah. That was great. And tomorrow I'll have time to walk around the show floor and play a lot of games. Yeah.
Nice. I have to admit, though, in between playing some of the games at GDC, I busted out Captain Toad because of the DLC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I keep on solving little puzzle challenges, so
it's a good on-the-go game. But hey, speaking of on-the-go, you have to go.
I really have to go. I have a meeting at the Game Developers Conference, and it takes about 20 minutes to get there.
The German Developers Conference.
I have to go to the German Developers Conference.
It's right across the street from the Game Developers Conference.
I am ironically meeting with a German gentleman from Gamescom.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we want to obviously be at Gamescom again this year. So, I will. It was wonderful seeing you guys, and please enjoy the show.
Thank you, Pear.
Don't talk about me.
Should we?
Isn't he just the worst?
Leaving in the middle.
Should we jump ahead to a question block? You think?
Man, yes.
Yeah.
I did want to mention The World Next Door, which is a game coming out on March 28th for the Switch. I was able to get some hands on with it. It's like a narrative RPG where you can choose dialogue options, but it's also an action puzzle game where you are moving puzzle blocks in real time to cast spells to attack your opponent who's also moving around in real time. It was really interesting and cool, and I liked it a lot. We'll talk about news next week, but yeah, let's just skip ahead to question block. Oh, wait, let me just mention, okay, out now this week is Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, everybody. It's a random dungeon generator. It got an 8.4 when the original Wii version came out. And we also got Unravel 2, which originally came out on June 9th last year. It's going to be $20.
I completely missed that Unravel was even coming to Switch.
I know, right? Yeah, it's coming to Switch. And then there's also a Splatoon 2 special demo from March 19th through the 35th. And if you get it, you also get access to a free 7-day trial to Nintendo Online.
Oh, cool.
And then if you choose to purchase the full game within that demo, you get 20% off. So yeah, and then also Turok 64 port, we talked about that a bunch, comes out on March 18th. It's $20. So question block.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Do it.
Viraj Joshi, I don't know how to pronounce your name, sorry. That's my one terrible skill is pronouncing
names.
I'm the worst. Everyone just butcher my name from now on to get back at me. I give you permission. But I have a question for the most fun game ever, Question Block, on the NVC podcast. With Google Stadia almost here, how do you see Nintendo thriving? What does it mean for Nintendo hardware and software? By the way, love the show. Have rated 5 stars on iTunes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, to add on to that, will Nintendo be willing to work with Stadia to stream its games? What do you guys think?
Brian, you actually saw Stadia.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and you had an opportunity to do a little hands-on.
I did, yeah, earlier today. It was... So I lied when I said I only played one game. I actually did a bit of Assassin's Creed on there. I think Nintendo's going to thrive anyway. It's Nintendo is Nintendo. Like, the community is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, Stadia looks fantastic, I think. But it's going to be competing for another type of audience. I actually think so.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, I think Stadia is going to be great, and I think Nintendo is going
to
do great.
Will continue to do great.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I doubt that Nintendo would like venture too far off their own hardware. You know what I mean? Like, it seems to me like they're doing streaming stuff, or they have been experimenting with that. You know, we've seen Assassin's Creed and Resident Evil 7. I think I already mentioned that on this show, but like, I just can't imagine that they would do like development for a specific competitor
I don't think they would either. Yeah. I think they're very protective of their own games.
Right.
And though, yeah.
You remember, I mean, at one point people were saying that Nintendo should definitely put all of their games on mobile, right?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. I mean, they've done
a few of them.
Yeah,
but
some,
they're all made for mobile experiences.
Exactly. I don't think... Yeah, no one's going to sort of just sway Nintendo into doing stuff easily.
And just to back up real quick, Stadia is Google's new streaming platform.
Right.
Just to explain, and their whole platform is that you'll be able to play games immediately, no download times or anything, from any device that you already own, like on your TV, on a Google Chromecast, or on your phone, tablet, whatever. And I think they showed Doom and Project Stream last year was kind of a test with Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I agree with you guys. I don't think Nintendo would be willing to work with Stadia up to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're going to do fine.
Yeah. They'll be fine. And from Sam Schumacher, Brian was such a great guest last time. I would like to ask him how he thinks the Switch has impacted gaming overall in the past 2 years.
Okay. So I think, I don't know how it's doing in the U.S., actually, the Switch. But in Europe, I know it's doing really well.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, it's definitely impacted gaming. You can see from a developer standpoint, all the developers I know are asking me questions about how to get on the Switch because they all want to be there. It's you can also the lineup you had today, Casey. I mean, so many awesome games are coming to the Switch. So I think it's had a huge impact. For me too, because I rarely get to play in my living room. My kids hog the TV all the time.
Right.
When I get to play, it's like in bed, and then I play on the Switch. So, yeah, I think it's just definitely it's impacted it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talk about how the Switch has impacted games every week on this show. So I feel like our opinions are pretty clear in that regard.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, I think my biggest learning this week just around GDC has been just how dedicated to indies Nintendo is.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that Steam and to a lesser extent PlayStation Vita revolutionized the way that people have access to independent games and development and give independent developers a real platform. Nintendo is taking 30 plus years of experience in development and publishing and applying that same philosophy and same cultivation to independent games and really putting spotlights on games like, you know, an entire 30-minute Nintendo Direct dedicated strictly to indie games saying like, hey, here are the games that we, Nintendo, the most prolific gaming company, are looking at and you should too. I think that's the biggest thing for me.
Mm. Yeah. It's just, they've really been elevating indies far beyond they've been.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Cool. Next question.
Yeah. So next we have three questions from Nintendo podcast forums on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is from David Barber. He says, will you ever remake the first SteamWorld DSi game?
Yeah, I think so. It's and they're going to kill me in the office for saying that. But but I want to do it. And the main reason is that there's such a cool little story behind that game.
Mm-hmm.
We had no intention from the beginning that we were going to highlight robots. It was actually it was totally accidental.
Mm-hmm.
It was the robots were the bad guys and the humans were the good guys. And then just during lunch one day, someone just said, wouldn't it be more funny, just quirky if it was the other way around? And then after that, like when we'd put that game out, we started really talking about SteamWorld.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't have been talking about SteamWorld if we had just kept it. So it's... like this sort of pivotal moment, you can't feel it, but actually one lunch hour sort of changed everything.
the entire quietly. Trajectory of your company. Yeah,
totally, really. Yeah. So it's just for historical reasons, it would be great just to bring it to the Switch, just so you have it there.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to become like a sales success, because maybe it doesn't deserve to be,
yeah.
But it would be great for everyone to at least be able to sort of watch a trailer from it or something.
It's interesting because that honestly kind of pivots off of the last question about, you know, like what is the Switch impact, you know, over the last couple of years. It's also an awesome preservation machine. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing so many, like friggin' Turok just came out on it, right? Like Turok was a game that was unavailable, locked on one system for so many years. So yeah, that's really interesting that you would remake it just for the simple fact of having it readily available.
Yep. Yeah.
And last question, you can make this answer as short as you want, but it's from Emmanuel Luivano, and it's, what other formats or genres would you like to test on the SteamWorld series? Racing would be cool.
Racing would be cool, right. I think we're just going to keep experimenting. It's such a great world to have, because robots, you don't kill robots. Like, they get damaged, but you can sort of fix them. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, terminally violent at any point. Racing, I'm not sure. I would really like to make SteamWorld Chess.
You know, okay.
Like, some sort of battle chess remake, but with robots.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian, thank you so, so much for taking time out of your day to come on NVC. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Zach, as well. And Pear, I know you had to
somewhere out there.
Yeah. Go on a very important quest.
Yeah.
But hey, this was NVC, Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo Podcast. You can catch us on your preferred podcasting platform every 3 p.m. on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. Every Thursday at 3 p.m.
Every 3 p.m.
Every 3 p.m.
Yeah.
It's 3 p.m. somewhere all the time. But hey, thank you so much for watching. And remember, this is the only place that you can
get the thing.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.